For a new Ford, make it Bill Curry, Tampa Bay's first family of Ford for over 60 years. At Bill Curry, our prices are better than good. They're the best, and they're right up front with our $5,000 best price guarantee. That's right, Bill Curry will meet or beat any Ford dealer's best offer or give you $5,000 cash. Shop our huge selection of new Fords, then get the lowest price, the best price, or we'll give you $5,000 cash. Only at Bill Curry Ford, located on Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. I am Bobby Fenton. This is the Week 12 edition of the show. We have a 3-7 football team about to take on another 3-7 football team, as the Atlanta Falcons will be the host this weekend when the Bucks go up there Sunday, 1 p.m. And yet, a lot of people this week were saying, you know, that'll do it after the Saints game, and this is finally what we can officially deem the end of competitive Bucks football in 2019 and move on to start working on next season. I personally thought that already happened after the London game against Carolina, but either way, call it whatever you want, Sunday was not a good day. So we're going to talk about it. I went to the game as a fan, and I got a whole bunch of fan experiences I wanted to get into. We'll talk about the matchup with Atlanta a little bit, I guess, although the most important and entertaining things don't really have much to do on the field as they do off the field, with Dirk Cutter and Raheem Morris also over there in Atlanta, so there's some interest there. But we're in that unfortunate spot of not really needing to get too fired up about the outcome one way or the other from here on in. And of course, if any of you want to get a hold of me, I always love hearing from you. The email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can get me at bobbygameday. So first of all, Bill Curry Ford right now, it's November. It's almost Thanksgiving. It's going to be the holidays soon. The 2020s are already in. They've got the new 2020 Explorers. They've got all the and if you don't want a brand new car, they've got pre-owned. They've got used. They've got all that stuff. And you can see all the inventory on the website, BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Whatever you get, all right, you're going to be able to get something with the unlimited nationwide lifetime warranty, unlimited years, unlimited miles. If you buy the car from Bill Curry Ford and you're still the owner, it can be a year from now, it could be 5 years from now, it could be 100,000 miles from now. Something happens with that engine, whatever, bring it in. They'll take a look at it. They'll get you fixed up. That's the warranty, and you're not going to find that at other places, and that's what separates Bill Curry Ford from everybody else on top of the already transparent online pricing you'll see at the website. So go check it out, or go in person. See my good friend Sean Sullivan, the GM. If you go there, they're a mile north, maybe a mile and a half north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway on the east side of the road, just north of the Hillsborough underpass there, and that's where they've been for nearly 60 years now, serving the Tampa community. Bill Curry Ford again. See U-R-R-I-E, or check them out at BillCurryFord.com. And I went to the game Sunday, so here's what I did. My father-in-law, and my wife too, actually, although she moved when she was very young, but they're from Louisiana. My father-in-law's from Houma. My wife was born in Baton Rouge, and my wife moved to South Florida when she was younger and grew up there before moving to Tampa when she met me, but they're all big Saints fans on her dad's side of the family. And her dad lives in Florida now, too, but he's still a Saints fan, her aunts and uncles and all that. So her dad, who lives in South Florida, was like, hey, I want to come up for the Bucs-Saints game. You know, can we get tickets? I love the naivete. He was like, can we get tickets? How hard is it going to be? And I was like, no, we'll be able to get tickets. Shouldn't be too bad. So I want to commend the Bucs, first of all. They have a good deal, and I believe you can do this for all the remaining home games, the family four-pack. And it's two kids' tickets and two adults' tickets. Now, they don't really check. You're basically getting four tickets. It's supposed to be two kids and two adults, which I did have two kids, so I wasn't, like, cheating the system or something. But it's four for $100, so $25 a ticket, which is very reasonable considering where the team is right now. And if the team was 8-3 or something like that, and they were looking at the number one seed in the NFC, things might be different, and that would be understandable, too. But given where they are, I was like, okay, that's a fair price. I'll do it. You know, a lot of times I buy my tickets out in the street or something like that. And I said, no, I'll do this. I'll go. I called the Buccaneers, because if you call them, you don't get those Ticketmaster fees when you buy online, which I refuse to pay. So I called them, and they were very nice. I got everything I needed from them. I actually ended up buying two family four-packs, so we had eight. because we had seven people, and it was still a good price, and even for seven people, it was worth it. So anyway, point is, got the tickets texted to me. Now, this is something where I had a problem. I like to have, and I've talked about this before, I like to have a paper ticket for a few reasons. One is because, first of all, I have a big shoebox in my garage with the ticket stub from every single sporting event I've ever attended, going back to the early 80s when I was born in 1980, and going back to when I was a kid, probably, you know, 4 or 5 years old, and my parents didn't always save them when I was too young to understand. But when I got old enough to understand what a ticket was, I kept the stub. I've got ticket stubs in my garage right now from 1986, you know, Buck games, Hall of Fame bowls, now known as the Outback Bowl, then later on, you know, Florida State games and Gator games and USF. I mean, anything, literally anything I've been to, I got the stub in there. And I've got literally a couple hundred Bucks game ticket stubs. I've been to that many Bucks games. So, you know, now everything's, hey, you got, if you're a season ticket pass holder, you got the card and they just scan, it's like a credit card and that's just good for the whole season. And then if you're like me and you buy them from the team, she's like, okay, do you want me to text your tickets to you or email them to you? I was like, huh. Well, you know what, can I have the paper tickets? Do you do that anymore, you know? And she's like, well, we only do that for big groups of 20 or more. I was like, well, no, listen, I'll drive to one Buck place. Like I told her, I would literally go pick them up at one Buck place, which if you get a chance to go to one Buck place ever, you should go because they do have a cool, like, atrium, the main entrance, and where the front desk receptionist sits. There's a big giant room there, and there's all this memorabilia dating back from the beginning of the team all through the years. The Lombardi Trophy, of course, is in there, and a few other things. I mean, it's really cool. It's like a museum of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, so you should just go in there and just check that out, even if you have no reason to go over there. But either way, I was like, I'll drive there. You know, that's not far from my house. I live in Tampa. I can go get... No, it's just not an option, so I gotta get them texted to me. So they text me the tickets. Fine. So silly me, you know, and I'm not going to say I'm not technologically advanced because I'm on the back end of the millennial generation. You know, I'm maybe at the very beginning of when that generation started to be born, but I know how to get my way around a cell phone or a smartphone or email and stuff. So they email me, they text me the tickets. Here's what I don't count on. Here's where I'm old school. Things are supposed to work, right? I mean, I just figure if I'm supposed to click on a button and something appears, then when I push that button, it'll appear. So what I didn't take into account is how jammed up all the internet reception gets, all the, you know, data usage gets when you go to these games. So silly me, I guess I should have opened up my tickets at home before going to the game. And I got busy. I was trying to get the kids ready and stuff. And so I just whipped my phone out when I was in line to go inside the stadium. And I thought, okay, I'll just click on the link right here and the ticket will pop right up. Well, guess what happens? And this isn't just me. Everybody and their mothers got their damn smartphone going and you click on the link in the text and nothing loads because there's a million people on their cell phone. And I know they've tried to add Wi-Fi hotspots and stuff like that. And once you get inside the stadium, it is better. It's not too bad in there. But standing outside at Gate C at the corner of Tampa Bay Boulevard and Dale Mabry, I was just sitting there like a schmuck with six other people all waiting for me saying, hey, can we go in? And I'm like, hang on. And then there's a million people behind us. And now I've got to get out of their way so they can go in while I try to open up the ticket window on my internet browser. And I was pissed. Give me paper tickets if I want them. Technology is great and there's nothing wrong with availing yourself of it. And I'm an environmentalist, okay? If it saves a little bit of paper, that's fine. But in the grand scheme of things, we're not talking about that much with paper tickets. And at least give people the option, even if it's not your baseline way of doing things anymore, even if your normal ticket is still going to be an online electronic ticket, that's fine. But give me the option. If I want paper tickets, if I got to drive to get them or go to the will call window or something to get them, have a little machine in there that prints them up and gives them to me because that's what I want. So, of course, this took like 15 minutes, and we were trying, you know, it was a flyover before the game, so we're trying to get in there to see the flyover, which I guess, fortunately, it took so long to get in there that we still saw the flyover outside the stadium. And there was groups of people just like me. It wasn't just me, all huddled up over their phones, hey, I can't get this page to load. And, you know, the ticket actually comes up on your phone with a barcode that they scan right onto your phone. But it's an internet page. Like, it's just you're opening up a page in Google Chrome or whatever your internet browser is on your smartphone. And that sucks. I don't want to do that when I'm trying. I just want to hand you a ticket and you scan it and I go in. And even better, I'd rather you tear off a little tab because I'm really old school like that. But I accepted the barcode scanning a long time ago. And you know, so finally, and this is, my wife said, well, your phone just sucks. You need to text me these links and I'll open it up. And you know what my phone is? It's a regular smartphone. A newsflash. I think it's dumb to pay $800 for a phone. I think people who do that are suckers, all right? And you might be saying, well, Bobby, you're the sucker because you've got a low-performance phone. I go in there to Verizon or whatever the hell it is, AT&T, whoever you have. I go in there and I say, give me the phone that comes with my plan for free. I'm not paying like $100 million for a phone here. My phone, I had to pay for it. Like it was like $120. And that's like the bottom of the bargain barrel, just the most base number, which is insane to me. And I was like, yeah, give me that one. They try and sell me all these. Oh, well, this one has the. Give me a phone, dude. Shouldn't have to pay anything for it. I'm paying you God knows how much every month for this damn plan, and the phone should just be part of that. But anyway, so apparently it's not enough just to get a phone for $100+. You have to spend hundreds of dollars so that when you open up an internet page, it actually works. So I texted all 7 of the links individually to my wife's phone, and she opened them up, and they did open on her phone. They still took a little while, but at least it worked, where my phone was just that little spinning circle thing over. So anyway, I'm going to bore you with this. I'm pissed off right off the bat at this whole thing. So we get into the game. We walk up to the upper deck, and these are, you know, the family section seats are in the very corners of the upper deck. But as soon as I walk in, I can see that there's just tons of open space, which I figured there would be. So we just go right to the 50-yard line on the upper deck and just find, like, you know, 4 whole rows that are just empty. And then we can camp out, spread out. The kids can run up and down the aisle. And we're like right at midfield, right, almost right next to where that little hut is at the very top of the stadium where they do the coaches film. You know, there's a little, like, it's not a press box, but it's a little, looks like a high school press box almost, and that's where the cameras are in there, and they film the game for the All-22. I was right next to that camera. And it's a great spot to be, I'll tell you what. One of the things I appreciated, and even in the press box at Raymond James, when I've been in there, you're not as high up and you're at an angle, but there's nothing like sitting either in the end zone high up or right at the 50-yard line high up enough. And even the highest row at Raymond James Stadium is still a good seat. Like, I'll give Raymond James Stadium that much. Like, the sight lines are pretty good. But you can see every route. You can see every lane open up on kickoff returns. Like, you see all that stuff much better than on TV and even better than from good seats. Like, if you have the best seats in the house, like 50-yard line, you know, 30, 20 rows up, whatever it is, that's a great spot to be. But even from there, you don't see everything open up. But I got an appreciation for a lot of things that, you know, I haven't seen as much of this season. Yeah, I used to go to every single game, every single one, and I don't go to as many now in person. Yeah, I still watch them, obviously, but being there in person, there is something to be said for it, especially when you have a view like that. And I'll talk in a few minutes about what that view afforded me, because it was pretty telling as far as the way this Bucks offense operates and the things that you're able to see, that, you know, what options Jameis has. Do sacks happen because of our line? Do sacks happen because of how slow we get the ball out? Do sacks happen because nobody's getting open? Do interceptions happen for those reasons? All that stuff. But anyway, watching the game up there, you know, it was a great day weather-wise. It was cool but not cold. It was overcast, so you didn't have to worry about the sun too much. My father-in-law, was his first time there. He's like, this is a great stadium. I was like, yeah, it's pretty good. It's architecturally boring, but it's functional. It's great. It does everything you need it to do. I wish it had covered seating like Seattle and Miami. Maybe it will one day. But anyway, you know, the whole place was filled with Saints fans. And anybody who's been around as a Bucks fan for a decent amount of time remembers all this very vividly. This is nothing new. It's not the way it was for a period there in, you know, the late 90s and early 2000s, but we're getting back to where we were in the 80s and early 90s, unfortunately. But there was a big write-up in the paper. I was kind of surprised because, like, on the front page of the Tampa Bay Times on Monday, not the sports page, the front page, there was a picture of a very, very pretty girl, first of all, in a Bucks outfit. And then there was all these Saints fans around her, and it shows a picture. Ray J doesn't always look like home for the Bucks. Tampa Bay's red can be overwhelmed by visiting teams' colors. And I was like, this isn't like story worthy. We expect this, right? I mean, first of all, I read you a whole bunch of numbers about the Bucks' overall record and home record over the past 10 years or whatever it's been. And it's awful. And not just the home record, but the idea that we're playing games that mean nothing. I mean, the Buccaneers could have won that game on Sunday. It would have been a huge upset, and everybody would have been, oh my God, I can't believe the Bucks won. And what would it have actually done? It would have done nothing. They'd be 4-6 instead of 3-7. So what? I mean, like, literally, so what? So how can you expect anybody to get excited when the outcome of the game doesn't matter? And then you take an opponent like the Saints, who are in first place, who are playing for a first-round bye. I know it might be hard to remember, but close your eyes tight and try and remember what that was like when the Bucks did that and how awesome every game was. Like, you could be 9-3. Well, hell, we need to get to 10-3. We got to get that first-round bye, man. We got to make sure we clinch the division, and the Saints are going to win the division going away. But the point is, like, you have teams coming in here with a lot on the line in these games, and you have the Bucks with nothing on the line. And then you have fan bases, and most of them are from up north, but the Saints are an exception, that are either in, you know, high numbers here or close proximity in the Saints' case, and they travel well. So yeah, everybody was in black. It was a little cool, so I thought to myself at the beginning of the game, hey, maybe it's just cold and people are wearing jackets that aren't team colors, but it's just generic black. But no, it was Saints fans, and they got their hoodat stuff going, and people get upset about it, and I don't like it either. I mean, I grew up, and it was the Bears and the Packers mainly. And, you know, occasionally, I mean, we don't play the Steelers at home that often, but it was mainly the Bears and Packers types you'd see back in the old NFC Central days at the Sombrero. And that was just kind of the way it was. And then it didn't happen as much anymore once 1997 came around. The Bucks got good, and then we had a season ticket waiting list and all that. But until then, until that happens again, I don't know what y'all expect. They're 3-7. We ought to be thanking anybody that goes to the game, whoever side they're on. Now, it's a little disconcerting when you see another couple of bad snaps, or not even bad snaps, early snaps from Ryan Jensen at center, and you wonder how many times this is going to happen this year, and this one's at home, and then you hear after the game, well, it was kind of loud in that end zone. We're at a home game, and the Bucs offense is contending with noise going into the end zone, and they have mistimed snaps because of it. It happened twice. One of them Jameis recovered on, and, you know, it could have been a fumble, and the other one, he threw a pick on it. So that admits negatively affecting the outcome of the game. I understand why people are upset. But, you know, again, I don't know what people expect, and I don't know what you think it's going to be like. I mean, look at the remaining home schedule. What do we got? We got Atlanta coming in here. We've got Indianapolis coming in here. I can't remember who the last was. Is it the Texans? Oh, the Texans, yeah. Are coming in here. And I think that's all we have left right now. So that won't be as bad with any of those three teams, I don't think. They don't really have either huge fan bases around here or successful. In the Falcons' case, they're terrible. Indianapolis and Houston, I don't think anybody around here cares that much. So that was the last time it's going to be like that, I think. But again, do we need it to be like that? I mean, the Cardinals game the week before was the lowest attended game at Raymond James Stadium ever. Going back to the Sombrero, the lowest attended game. So at least the Saints fans got the number up over 50,000. And then there comes the game itself, and it was the usual stuff. I mean, the Bucks made tons of mistakes, got down early, and of course from that point on, and you might have heard the stat last week on the show that the Bucks have lost, now it's 29, but going into the game, they lost 28 in a row, going back to 3 years ago, when they trailed by 8 points or more at any point in the game. So it got to be a double-digit deficit early in the game with a team that's already 3-6. And a million people from the other team's fans all around us. And it wasn't a great day to be a Bucks fan at Raymond James Stadium. But I'll tell you this right now. I was still happy to be there. My son, who I talk about him all the time because it's like seeing myself and going back in time to the late 80s. Just like me, my son didn't care what the Bucks record was. My son's mind is pure. He's still idealistic. I don't want him to lose that. I used to be that way too. He's been to 2 Bucks games before Sunday, and they had won them both. So, like, it was 20-0 at one point. And I casually said, I mean, not even in an angry way. I just casually said, oh, hey, buddy, it's going to be your first Bucks loss. You know, you've never seen him lose before. It's been two wins, and now you're going to get a taste of the other side. And he looks at me. He goes, and it was so cute. Like, it was so innocent. He looks at me. He goes, well, Daddy, how do you know? It's only the second quarter or whatever. And I was like, oh. And I want him to think this way. I like that attitude. I want him to never give up, never quit. So I had to catch myself. I was like, oh, yeah. No, you're right, buddy. Like, if they lose, it'll be the first Bucks loss you've ever seen. And I'm already, like, riding the game. I'm so jaded and just generally just pissed off watching the Bucks nowadays, like most of us are. And I don't want my son to become like that at too young of an age. He's young. He, like, in his mind, he was like, no, the Bucks can come back and win. And they actually got it to 20-10, to their credit. But it was just, you know what? My heart melted. I was like, that's the kind of kid I used to be. That's what I still wish I was like. And I want him to be like that as long as possible. It's 20-0. I'm already like, yeah, this one's done, buddy. We can go ahead and pass. I'd never leave a game early. I don't do that. But just my attitude watching the game turn from, like, being into the game to I'm going to recline in my seat with my cell phone and surf Twitter while the game's going on, and I might look up if there's a roar of the crowd. Like, that's what it got to be. Although, again, they did get it to 20-10. Once again, Bruce Arians, he kicked when he should have gone for it, and there was a stat that came out. It was an article on The Athletic, actually, detailing teams. I'll talk about it in a minute, but detailing teams' fourth down usage and where Bruce Arians ranks is almost dead last, as you might not be surprised. But we kicked a 50-something yard field goal down 20-7 in the third quarter. And it's like, dude, can we, you know, like, you really think just making it 20-10 means anything when the Saints' offense is going up and down the field all day? Like, we're going to get it to 20-10, then hold them like three straight times and come back and win 24-20 or something. I mean, get the hell out of here. Like, you know we need touchdowns. I don't care if it's fourth and five or whatever. It's a 55-yard field goal. Go for it. Who cares if you don't get it? Like, what are you possibly afraid of? But Matt Gay, to his credit, did make the 55-yard field goal. And he's been awesome this year. If you want to look for bright spots, I know the Giants kick is the one that we're going to remember because it was the one that's the most important to this point. But he is really, I mean, that kick notwithstanding, Matt Gay's been awesome. But they made it 20-10 on that. Obviously, there was Jameis with the interceptions again and again and again, and they weren't all his fault. The O.J. Howard play, I mean, it's just like waves crashing on the beach at this point. I will say this, and I tweeted this during the game at some point. I've been bitching about the offensive line a lot, and this is one of the things where Joe and I, from Joe Bucks fan, disagree a little bit, and it's fine. He's got numbers backing him somewhat. He posted a thing, some offensive line rankings, and these were done by Advanced Stats. These are next-gen stats, and this was posted on the 19th. I'm recording this on Thursday, so this is from a couple days ago, earlier this week. But, you know, Joe has talked about before on different posts on the website how the most popular thing that fans like to complain about is offensive line play and then, you know, something with the coaches. And it's true. I mean, I'm a fan, okay? In addition to someone who I like to think looks at things a little more analytically since I do a podcast, I'm still a fan at heart. And yeah, I do bitch about the offensive line. Now, the offensive line I don't think is very good. I don't think I'm just saying that as a fan going, you know. But numbers have borne out that a few of them are okay, and overall the Bucks rank middle of the pack in their pass rush. So just pass blocking, not run blocking. So that, you know, obviously that's two different things. But we're looking at the numbers here per Next Gen Stats. First of all, Jameis averages 2.75 seconds to release a pass. That's number 20 out of 38 quarterbacks. And then if you want to go individually, both Ali Marpet and Ryan Jensen actually rank pretty high in their pass blocking numbers. And if you go to the website, go to joebucksfan.com, you can see all this. But basically, when you say, okay, 20th out of 32 teams and how long our quarterback holds the ball, the case being made there is, okay, well, look, if our offensive line was so bad, how could our quarterback have the ball longer than all but, you know, 11 or 12 other guys in the league? The Bucs are in the bottom third in that category. That means the offensive line is giving Jameis time. Yes and no. the big thing I took away, and this goes back to what I mentioned a few minutes ago, watching the game from up high. And, you know, you can do this. They have the All-22 film that comes out, and you can do this. But being there in person live is really, you know, it's nice to be able to see it. And, of course, in film, you can play it back and forth. Trevor Sikkema over at Pewter Report, who does a great job with his cover three every week. You know, obviously, Joe Bucks fans the number one go-to place, but I have no problem pointing out other places I think you can also see good things. And I think Trevor's column is really good every week. He writes something called the cover three. And this week it said, Bucks offense more difficult than it needs to be, was the headline. And he does a good job. He puts together all these GIFs and you know, takes out certain plays and things like that. And Brian Baldinger's Twitter feed is another one. Brian Baldinger did a couple breakdown. I'll retweet them. If you go to Bobby Game Day on Twitter, you can see them on my feed of what Jameis sees. And our offense, you know, this is the nature of Bruce Arians with the downfield passing. I mean, it requires the quarterback to hold the ball that long. I think not necessarily because our offensive line is so great, but because of necessity for guys to get out of their stems and their routes. You know, we have a complicated, not slow developing, but it just takes more time to run deeper routes. We have that type of a passing game. And it makes it very difficult, and I don't think it's compatible with this offensive line. Now, hey, Marpet, great. Jensen, great. But they're inside guys. Our tackles, excuse my language, are dog shit. DeMar Dotson is just barely hanging on. I don't dislike DeMar Dotson. I mean, he's been a veteran guy. He's near the end. And Donovan Smith is just absolutely killing us, all right? I mean, I saw a few, and you'll go, if you watch the film, you can see it. I saw it live. Donovan Smith just gets beat clean. And how many snaps does Jameis Winston get to just drop back, stick his back foot in the ground, set his foot, step forward, and throw? How often does that happen? Almost never. So you can, listen, I'm not a numbers denier. I'm a numbers guy. If you know me, I'm always saying, well, don't go by just your own two eyes. Look at the numbers. So I'm not throwing out the numbers here. I'm not paying no respect to the numbers, all right? But with an offensive line, it's a unit. And if you have even one guy who gets wasted, then the whole thing gets blown up. And I like Ali Marpet, and I like Jensen, and even Kappa's done pretty well being thrust into his role, all right? But our offensive line as a whole, and listen, this was this game was worse than some other ones, okay? It's not good enough for this offense especially. And some of that is the offensive line's fault, and some of it's the offense's fault, but either way, we are asking them to do things they can't do. Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich are asking them to do things that they cannot do. They can't protect that long. You know, everybody says nobody likes a dink and dunk offense. I mean, I like an offense that gets the ball where it needs to go quickly and gets yards. And we all love it when Jameis rips a 20-yard pass over the middle to somebody running a crossing route and they're open and he hits them. And that's great, but we can't do it all the time. We can't just be like, oh, we're going to hit a couple of these and hope for the best. We need to consistently move the ball. And I'm watching Jameis, and I'm not getting into all his interceptions again, you know, one by one. But, you know, I'm watching him every damn down drop back within a second or two, not even two, within a second and a half at the most. He's already moving. And he's good when he moves a lot of times, if he can buy time. He's not much of a runner. There were a lot of times when our best play call would have been, hey, send everybody just downfield, wait a second or two, and then Jameis run because the whole defense has vacated the middle of the field. And he did it once, and he got like 15 or 20 yards. There were a couple other times when you could see from where I was sitting way up high. And again, it's easier to say it when you're sitting way up high than when you're down there on the field with the ball in your hand and guys are trying to hurt you. But I could see up top, dude, just tuck it and go. Go get 6 yards here. You can do it. Like, there was a lot of space in the middle. And then slide, and we'll take second and four or third and two, whatever. You know, but he's looking and looking. And, you know, the Saints defense did a tremendous job. But this offense makes it harder than it has to be because they try to do things they're not built to do. And I mean, as an 11-man unit, they're not built to do. And from Trevor's column, quote, it just doesn't seem to be easy. It's all vertical concepts that ask Winston to hold on to the ball for longer than one should behind this offensive line. The designs of the routes are not creating open space for pass catchers to run with it after receiving the ball. And on and on and on. It's true. It's true. Like, they need to completely revamp either their offensive line situation, mainly the tackles. All right, because you're right, and Joe's right about the numbers. I mean, Ollie Marpet is not the problem. Even Ryan Jensen's not the problem. Even Kappa's probably not as big of a problem as we thought right guard was going to be before this year started. But at tackle, and this goes back to the draft. I mean, we're looking at the draft already, again, and everybody's like, oh, we need this, that, and yeah, we need a million things. You can't get them all in the draft in the first round or even the second round. So we've already drafted 75 million corners, and our secondary still gets torched. Do we need another corner? Do we need another pass rusher? Do we need another tackle? Yeah, we need all of those things. We're going to have one first-round pick. And as of right now, that's the sixth overall pick, for those of you wondering, although there's like four teams or five teams at 3 and 7 and tiebreaker. You know, it'll all sort itself out. Bucks could still pick anywhere from the top 5 to 12, depending on what they do in their final few games here. But the point is, no matter where they're drafting, even if it's pretty high, I mean, you can't just go just rebuild everything with the draft. You can get a couple guys. You know, the offensive line has been neglected for several years. And I still think, you know, not getting Quentin Nelson hurt them a few years ago, even though I love that they got Vita Vea instead. But that's just the point. You know, we like having Vita Vea too. You couldn't have gotten both of them. You can't get all these guys at once. So there's a lot to go. I'm not necessarily, and it's only been 10 games, it's only been 1 year, I'm not trying to come on the show today and be a knee-jerk type or a reactionary type, which I always speak out against. But the more I watch the Bucks, the more I watch the game management, you look at what the offense has done, the design of it, and again, the offense is not the problem. If you look at the offense's overall numbers, they're pretty good. I'm not trying to make this about the offense. The defense has obviously been the issue this season, mainly, even despite all the interceptions. And the offense hasn't been great, but they've not been the main problem, let's put it that way. But all told, I'm not impressed with the coaching staff so far. I'm not impressed with the way Bruce Arians manages games. I'm not impressed with his decision-making. I'm not impressed with the scheme. And I'm starting to already think about what the next... Not that they're going to fire Arians, or I'm even saying they should, but I'm already starting to think about what the next step is for the team, because I feel like we whiffed on another one. I'll say it right now. I feel like we whiffed on another one. I don't feel... Again, there's so many different things. It's not all Bruce Arians' fault. It's not all Jameis Winston's fault. It's not all the secondary's fault. It's all those things' fault. And so that's where we are right now, in my opinion. It's a pretty depressing spot to be, quite honestly. Email me if you want to, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. As far as looking at the Falcons game, and again, the Falcons are a lot better team than even their current record looks. They're certainly a lot better team than they looked when they were 1-7. And I was a fool. You know, I talked about how I got eliminated from my survivor pool a couple weeks ago, taking the Saints over the Falcons at home. And the Saints should have won that game. But the Falcons at 1-7, if you look at DVOA, which is something from Football Outsiders, which is kind of an overall, like, all-encompassing metric that measures just every play, its opponent adjusted, all those good things, supposed to be like an all-encompassing number. At 3-7, the Falcons' DVOA is better than the Buffalo Bills' DVOA at 7-3. One, the Bills have played a very easy schedule. The Falcons have played a very difficult schedule. And at 1-7, I even remember thinking when I was making that survivor pool pick, I'm kind of worried about going against the Falcons. I mean, the Saints are at home in the Dome off a bye week, which so were the Falcons. But, you know, this is a double-digit spread. Saints are going to just, you know, hold serve here, get this win. But the Falcons are still, they have people that can make plays. They have Julio Jones, you know, Matt Ryan's. They're not as bad as this. And they've shown it the past couple of weeks. One thing that has also happened, by the way, and this is interesting. You know, we talk about Dirk Cutter, who's in Atlanta now after, you know, being relieved of his duties as the Bucs head coach. Another guy who's over there is Raheem Morris. And interestingly enough, in the past couple of weeks, what has happened, you know, we all think of Raheem Morris. He's a defensive coach. He was defensive coordinator before he was named head coach here. He was actually coaching the receivers in Atlanta, and Dan Quinn, out of the bye week, moved him back over to the defense in the secondary. And since then, it's only been two games, and I'm not trying to say it's directly because of this one thing, but since then, Raheem Morris is, it's not overall his defense, but the unit he's been working on, the secondary and the defense overall, they've only given up single-digit points in both games, including against that mighty Saints offense that just lit the Bucs up this past Sunday. And they did it again to Carolina this past weekend, did Atlanta. And so Raheem Morris has got them stopping people, basically. And again, he's not the only guy, and it's only two games. And I always liked Raheem Morris. Raheem Morris, let me tell you something here. This is going to sound crazy to some of you, but it's not that crazy. Raheem Morris should get another chance to be a head coach in the NFL. I mean, he was completely thrust into something that he maybe was a little young for, and not just that, he was given, and he went 10-6, by the way, and had the Bucs in playoff contention. They should have been in the playoffs that year at 11-5. But he was thrust into a role with older players, which wasn't a good mix for him because he was so young, and I think they walked all over him. And it was a roster that had been gutted. And again, he's still in the first year, got him to 10-6, and they were a horrible offensive pass interference call against Kellen Winslow away from being 11-5 and in the playoffs. And the Green Bay Packers, who won the Super Bowl, would have not even been in because they got in over the Bucs on a tiebreaker at 10-6. But the point is, you know, he was 10-6, then he was 4-2 the next year, and then everything just completely, like, I've never seen a team nosedive like that to go from not just 4-2 to losing, but they were getting just absolutely ripped every, I mean, it would be like 35-0 in the second quarter. You guys remember that? That year for Raheem, and it was like, I remember doing the Bucs postgame show over on 620 that season, and every Sunday I'd come in after these games, and I didn't know what to say. Like, I'm not one of these fire the coach guys, but I was like, I don't think this is Raheem Morris's fault, but my God, like, this team is just complete. I mean, that team was garbage. Like, those players, they all should have and still should be ashamed of themselves. But he was 32, 33. Raheem Morris was, like, getting a haircut after he got promoted to defensive coordinator, and then they decided to fire John Gruden, and then the Glazers call him in and say, yeah, about that defensive coordinator thing, you want to just be the head coach? And they make him the head coach. That's what happened. Like, that's what happened in 2009. So, and it ain't going to be for the Bucs, I'm not saying that, but somewhere now Raheem's in his early 40s. He's been there, done that, and had some success, okay? And now 10 more years of, I think he's a guy who some team should look at. I really do. I don't know him personally. I'm not, like, advocating for a guy that I'm buddies with. I don't know him at all. I've never met him. You know, I've just covered stuff that he's done as the head coach of the Bucs. But I think he's a guy who really could and should get another shot. But that'll be interesting to see from Atlanta, who, again, has had the defense playing very well the past couple weeks, has looked like a team that is, you know, maybe not one of the best teams in the NFL, but certainly not a 3-7 also ran. So if it's possible for 2 3-7 teams to meet going in opposite directions, that's what this game on Sunday feels like. And with that said, watch the Bucs go out and win by 2 touchdowns. And even if they did, it wouldn't matter all that much. But as I always tell you guys, and this is the thing to keep remembering, at the end of the day, we only get 16 of these. Usually it's 16. Occasionally it's another one or two more. But we only get 16 of these. Bucs games are always fun. They're always special. And I had a good time on Sunday being there at Raymond James Stadium. I'll have a good time, and I'll watch it with my son this Sunday at 1 o'clock when the Buccaneers take on the Atlanta Falcons. So with all that said, I want to thank all of you for listening. I want to thank the Joes for giving me this platform, the single number one best place on the internet for Bucs coverage, joebucsfan.com. It's already been updated 4 times since I started recording the show. That's how much fresh content you get with Joe Bucs Fan. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, our sponsor. Check them out, BillCurryFord.com. And thanks to all of you. Final week of bye weeks before Thanksgiving here, so we get everything on schedule after that. And I'll be back next week. Pre-Thanksgiving, I suppose. I don't know what I'll do. I'll record it at some point. We'll get something out there. Of course, Thursday is Thanksgiving. But in the meantime, thanks to all of you. Have fun this Sunday. Use the game as an excuse to watch it with friends or get together with people that you like spending time with. And whatever you do and wherever you go, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.